Hi, welcome back to Section. This is Computer Science E75. My name is Siddharth, and today we're going to focus on MySQL and a little bit of JavaScript. Hope Project 2 is going well. It is due on Monday, and it involves a lot of MySQL and JavaScript. And if you have any questions, do email in at help@cs75.net. We're really eager to help. So to begin the section, I thought we'd do a little bit of JavaScript. I know we did some validation last week, and anything we do today is sort of preliminary, but I wanted to make sure that we sort of go through the basics, just in case people are still iffy about how JavaScript works. JavaScript, as we talked about last week, is a client-side language, so everything that happens is on the side of the client. I have five examples here. Like I said, these are really basic, but it should be good to just go over them just in case you have any questions. The first one is just like an alert. It throws this alert box that are really annoying. I remember when I built my first site, I had five of them for every page that you got to. So so this is... Sorry. So JavaScript, actual JavaScript, is enclosed within the script tag. It's just like an HTML tag. And the only thing that's in there is a function definition. Function definitions, as we've seen so far in PHP and a little bit of JavaScript last week, there's a function with no arguments, so it's just annoying. And it just throws an alert, which says has got to be the most annoying thing in the intertubes. If you look at the actual HTML code here, the body is onload, annoy. Onload is just another attribute that you specify to have the HTML page call the function that you specify when you load it. So onload, just like the name says, when the page loads, it calls annoy and the alert gets printed out. So the next example is a little bit more complicated. It is not very, but it has a single variable. So you declare variables in JavaScript using the var keyword. So we're initializing this variable annoy to true, and we're saying if annoy equals true, just throw this alert. So this is obviously this will always be true, since we just defined annoy to be true, and the condition will pass, and the alert will always be displayed. The third example.
The very act of just declaring something makes it true.
I'm sorry. The very act of just declaring something. I'm not sure. In PHP, that's not the case.
In JavaScript,
okay. If that's, I'm not sure.
Variable equals sun is purple. Then
sure. A variable equals anything works, but I don't think it can be just variable something. But that's something I can look into. But as long as you initialize something, it works. So the next one is a little more complicated. So one of the requirements of Project 2 is to ensure that the each field is focused as necessary. So we've talked about focus a little bit, but focus is just focusing on a text box. So just to make things easier for the user, web pages often focus on the field that you're expected to fill out. So if you're in an login page, the field that you're that it focuses to is usually the username. So here it says, so I'm going to click out, and I'm going to hit focus, and it just focuses on the field that I've specified. And then annoy, do you want me to annoy you? I'm going to say yes, I'm going to say annoy, and it says same message as last time, but if not, it says, oh, too bad, I'm still going to annoy you. Again, very preliminary JavaScript, but it's good to sort of go over these so that you, if you have any questions, do let me know. Yes.
I noticed in your JavaScript you don't have any of that C data bracket stuff. Can you just go over what syntactically what that is?
Sure. Questions about what C data does. I guess it makes so. Let's just talk about it with respect to XML, because you probably see that in XML a lot too. C data is basically a way of escaping characters. So when in PHP, when we call the HTML special chars function, it basically escaped a given set of characters in a certain way, so that it didn't affect like the rest of your document. So when we worked with MySQL, we said we're going to MySQL real escape string. This ensured that there were no MySQL characters in it that could distort the actual query. In very much the same way in JavaScript and in XML, just to ensure that there is no, so for instance, if you want to print the greater than character, or if you want to, for you basically want to say this is data and not actual HTML markup. This just ensures that all of anything that could be construed as markup will be sort of escaped and presented as just text. So you could wrap all of these around C data. I haven't because I don't have anything that could potentially distort my markup. But in XML, for instance, I believe this ampersand sign is if you have an ampersand sign in the middle, it invalidates the character, invalidates the XML. In those cases, for instance, you definitely want C data around it because you want if a user enters ampersand, you want to make sure that you still accept it as actual text and not something that kills your XML.
I've seen some code that actually uses the comment, was it the less than mm-hmm. sign with the explanation, mm-hmm. and then they put the code inside there. Is that effectively the same?
Oh no. So that the question is if it's so I'm guessing you are referring to. Let me just pull up a web page so that I can something like this. Sorry,
right.
Some code. So this just comments out the entire code. So anything that happens in there does not count.
Even
so
from a JavaScript perspective,
I'm not sure. I've never seen that, but I'm happy to check about that. In JavaScript, comments are like in C, so they're the double slash for the single line comment. So if you have a line of code, say variable foo equals true, you can do something like setting variable foo to true. So it's just like a C or in several other languages, which work this way. On this note, I want to bring something else about style. I know we've talked a lot about sort of encouraging you to make sure that you comment your code extensively, but keep in mind that you don't require a comment for every line of code that you write. Just make sure that you're sort of places where things need to be clear, you clarify with comments, but you don't have to, for every, you don't need a comment that says, oh, setting variable foo to true, because anybody who looks at it will be comfortable with recognizing that. So just keep that in mind as you write comments, but definitely comment your code, especially when you make sort of design decisions at some level. At least mention what you're doing and sort of clarify that so that people don't have to actually read your code to do it. Another useful convention that I've remarked in some of the feedback that I sent back, it's not really something that we're going to enforce. We're not going to penalize you if you don't do it, but something that's sort of, I guess, an industry convention is just to keep your code plus comments usually less than or equal to 80 characters. Again, this is like nothing that we're going to enforce. So just keeping your code in comments, so less than 80 characters, it makes your code a lot more readable and sort of more accessible to the reader. So let's just go into the source of this one. Let me kill this. So there are two functions I've defined here. One is setup, and the other one is annoy. Setup basically says on get element by ID. This is something we saw last time. Give me all the elements that have the ID something, but ID, as we've seen, has to be unique. Therefore, give me the element in the HTML that is, that has the ID. Here, we're calling the ID that we're requiring is annoy, and we're saying dot focus, which basically sets a text field. Dot focus basically places a cursor in it. So this is essentially saying that give me the element in give me the text field in the form that has the ID annoy. And then focus your cursor on that so that the user can go right into typing.
Where's the focus line?
Oh, it's right here. Sorry.
Oh, there it is.
Yep. So get element by ID. So first get the element by ID and then focus. Question?
Yeah, so it doesn't matter if the ID is referring to a class or...
No. So the question was, it doesn't matter if the ID is referring to a class. Yes, very much so. Because classes and IDs are different. Classes... Right,
class
exactly.
Would be.
Yeah, anything, any object that has the ID that can is fine. Just keep in mind that like so classes can be like have multiple elements sort of in the same class, but ID as the name suggests is unique. So here you say get element by ID, but I believe the actual syntax for the other one is get elements by tag name, maybe get elements by whatever. So that's so here it says the annoy is just stores the actual value of what annoy is. So here get element by ID again. So give me the text field in the form that has the ID annoy. And once you have that, give me the value that is stored in it. So when I click it, whatever value that has, I'm going to say if annoy equals equals yes, alert that this whatever else alerts something else. And in the actual form, this is just as we've seen, the input type ID is the text field that I was talking about. And here on click again, so like just like on load, just calls a function every time the serve object loads. On click basically calls the function every time you click the object that you've specified the attribute for. So if you're just get your feet wet, just write a few examples. One thing that I mentioned last week that I'm going to stress again is that debugging JavaScript is hard because more often than not you don't see explicit notices. So unless you have just find there are multiple debuggers available for Firefox's add-ons, definitely use them. Firebug, which I demonstrated in the first section, is very useful too. So here the other thing is here it says document.getElementById, so you can also either encapsulate all of it into a function and sort of call it, or just call it right away by saying just giving it actual JavaScript and saying document.getElementById.focus, and every time I click that, it focuses the text field. Is that clear? Great. Example 4. Oops. Oof. Okay. I'm going to come back to that one. But here, this is a little more of JavaScript. Let's actually see what it does before we do it. So when I click this, it says it changes the text to red. Let me make this bigger. When I click this, it changes the text to blue. You should have some intuition about how you would do this. So I have the actual text specified inside a div, and the div is called color div. And my script basically says change to red, basically says get element by ID color div, and sets the style style.color. So it's a document object model. So it's just think about it as a tree. So you have the document. Within the document, you have the actual object. In the object, you have the style part. In the style part, one of the nodes is color. So you're setting .style.color equals red. And change to blue basically sets it to blue. And this is basically like manipulating CSS sort of on the fly. And every time they click that, it changes the color of that text. Any questions?
So it doesn't really matter how many layers you've got nested in your DOM.
Right.
Going to go find that tag. It could be color div, could be three divs.
Yep. So the only comment I would make about that is that very function specific. Because ID is unique, I believe that definitely works. But I would definitely look at the actual documentation of the function you want to work with to make sure that it actually sort of works throughout the document and not just like specify it in bubble.
So, would this document let you have a span tag with ID color div, or would it throw up a complaint?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
If you had a span tag in this document, could it have an ID of color div?
Sure. If you had a span tag, that's a very good question because I don't know how, I don't think HTML actually throws errors. I think it just takes the first one to be the actual one. I've unfortunately never dealt with that. Use IDs in like classes like as they're supposed to be used, right? So like for the big, if you have one big element in your entire page, that's probably an ID because sort of the content ID tag is like all the content that your page will display should be one big, should be an ID. But for instance, like if you're just specifying CSS like tags, so if you're saying all the blog posts in my page will be of form this CSS, you want to just use classes there and not ID. Any questions? Cool. So there are examples from this up on the site that it usually is up at. There are also examples from last week for validation, so make sure you go through them for project 2. So for the rest of this section, I wanted to...
What were those, for example? What were they? The
examples from last week?
Under your...
Yes. So they're just validation. So for instance, if text field is blank, like change the color to red and sort of display something, display an error message, all client-side sort of validation. Uh-huh. That I think there are 7 examples, so definitely take a look, and the source. So take a look at it and play around and write your own. So the rest of this section I wanted to do...
Do you have one for email?
I'm sorry?
Do you have one for email?
No, so for the regexes, for the actual regular expressions, I don't have... I have a very bad one for email, so part of the challenge, I think, is to just sort of figure out, read the regex documentation and play around with a few examples. There's a great website called regexpal.com. I really like it because you can basically enter a regex and... So you can basically enter a regex and it, oops, I don't need these, there we go. So you basically enter a regex and it basically sort of highlights whatever your regex does given a bunch of content. So it's another useful way to sort of on the fly just check to see if your regex works as you go. So if you could do something like foo.com, so let's say dubstar dot... So this is like a really bad regex for email because it doesn't check a bunch of things, but the overall idea is sort of right. It has an attribute, so it has the first part, so the dot star basically is any characters, any number of characters, the at symbol, which and every email should have, the dot star for more any number of characters, and then an actual dot followed by more characters. So keep in mind that, so if you do... Oops. So see, for instance, like this doesn't, there we go. So none of these work, but the first one works because the regex that I just specified matches only that. So regexpal is a useful site to play around with if you're trying to figure out regular expressions. Any other questions? Cool. So for the rest of the section, I wanted to do go over some code that one of the TFs from a previous version of this class wrote. It is an entire blog engine in PHP. It is very, very well written, and I think there are a lot of useful things to learn about the sort of design of the code from what exists. Most of the source is online. The one page that is not online is the login page because you're implementing that for Project 2, and it would be essentially the same. So I've not provided the source for the login page, but the rest of the source is online. Definitely take a look at it. Definitely read through it and sort of see how different components of the site work together. Let's take a look at the actual, let's begin with the database. So the database consists of 5 tables, so categories, comments, posts, categories, users. The site is not very complicated, so it's just a blog engine. So basically, some place that you can insert a post, and all the posts are presented, and people can comment on it. Basically, all the functionality that like a standard blog engine would give you. We don't. Again, there's no sort of registration functionality, and there's obviously no code for it because again, you're implementing it. But there is login and a users table, so you sign in, you authenticate before you make posts, and then you can comment. Let's begin with the users table. We've talked for 2 sections, so I'm just going to go over it really briefly. There's an ID, a username, password, first name, last name, and a last mod. A last mod is just a timestamp, as the field indicates. It's a useful sort of nifty trick to just keep track of, depending on how you need it. Obviously, you don't need this for Project 2, but it's just a way to keep track of when the user's sort of details was last modified. So it's just a bunch of things. So let's browse the actual table. And there are a bunch of usernames and passwords here. So let's sign in as student at harvard.edu and the password crimson. So I'm going to hit sign in. Provide your username and password. So and crimson, hit sign in. It says, oh, so I'm signed in up here. So it says I have this add post option now, along with a sign out option. So let's just sign out and see how. And then sign out just killed it. Let's begin with the sign out code, and then we can sign back in. Let's begin with the sign out code, and hopefully we can go from there. Let's see. Oh, world sections. So log out. .phps. Okay. So logout.phps begins by requiring once config.php. So let's take a look at what config.php does. So config.php defines a bunch of global sort of global variables that you're going to use. This is a very, very good way, and there is no reason you should have multiple pages with like the same login information. So it's a great example of factoring out code that should be factored out. So the database username, et cetera, et cetera. It itself requires two functions. One is two pages. So classes.php and functions.php. We'll take a look at how that happens. And after it requires those two, it calls this function blog open DB connection. So as the name specifies, just open a connection to the database and start the session. The code is commented extensively, probably a little more than it needs to be, simply because we want to make sure you understand what the code is doing. So let's begin with classes.php. So classes are something that we've not really seen in section or I don't think lecture either. So classes are basically a bundle of objects. So you have, so let's say you have a student, right? So the student obviously has a name, an ID, so student ID, and say a grade. So clearly there are three separate parts to a student, but all of them sort of come together to form one cohesive unit, which is the student itself. So classes are basically a way to bundle all of these, bundle different functions and sort of variables and objects for to use within like one setting. So obviously you just split this up by based on like closest sort of logical sense. So the student, obviously this fits perfectly because all these are details of the student. This is basically this class called feedback that has a bunch of, it has these, so at the very top, so it says construct. So construct is a constructor. Constructors are basically functions that are called when the object is initialized. So when the object is initialized, a function, a constructor is called. And I'm going to be very brief about this because you don't necessarily have to use it, but it's just very good code, and I want to make sure you get a chance to see how it works. And there are tons of tutorials available, both specifically with respect to PHP and sort of larger scheme of things about constructors, classes, et cetera. So this is basically stores these three variables. Think about constructors as basically the initializing way of classes. So when I have a class, I want to initialize the variables to certain values. So constructor basically does this. We'll sort of see how feedback works in the larger scheme of things when we see how the code uses it. For now, let's skip to functions.php. Another good thing to note is the sort of style of commenting here. This is how more often than not comments are written. So you have a function, you have a set of comments, multi-line comments, right above it, usually in this very same format. So any code that you randomly pull up will probably have this sort of an idea, this sort of structure. So you have a line about what it does, its return value, and any other information that you want to provide about it. So function blog create post link, as the name suggests, just returns the value, returns the link where the post that you just created. So given an ID, it just appends it to a string and then returns it. String format date. So given a date, how do you best like format it to like date and time in order to store it in like however you want to do it. Blog redirect. This is something that you've been doing a lot for Project One. You have a page. You want to do something with some data and then redirect the user away from it. So the redirect basically takes care of everything that you do. So basically gets the host, gets the URL, and sets the header to whichever page you want to go. Notice that it takes one argument, that is the destination, and that's what it redirects you to, obviously. So this is a very good sort of model of how you should and how it is ideal to write code in. So you have everything that's abstracted out with very good names, obviously. So when I look at the function blog format date, I know that given a format and given a date, it just formats it in that format. So just factor everything that you use more than once out into functions. here, blog redirects you to another one. Blog is authenticated, basically checks to see if this basically just returns if this is true or not. We've seen how authentication works a bunch of times, just to sort of briefly summarize it. You have an authentication flag in the $_sessions loop superglobal. You set that to true if the user is logged in. If not, you set it to false. And returning is set basically returns true or false. So instead of just checking that if is set $_session blog user, which is not necessarily intuitive as to what it's doing, just abstracting that into a function, so that if you change the underlying implementation of how you authenticate the user, if you decide to change like which part of session you're setting the flag in, you wouldn't have to make changes to multiple places in the code, just this one function, and everything will sort of fit into it still. Blog show post, it just requires this templates.post.php. We'll take a look at what it does in a second. Display feedback, Boolean. So blog OpenDB connection. This is something that you all have sort of we've had in previous examples too. It first tries to connect. If the connection fails, you exit. If not, you select the database. If that fails, you exit. And at the end of it, you just return the connection from the function. So this is a high-level overview of like just this one function that this one page that has a bunch of functions. Any questions about the code?
You know, one thing I don't know if we ever explicitly covered was we covered the double equal sign.
Mm-hmm.
It really is true,
mm-hmm.
or it really is false.
Right.
That's how I think of it. But,
right.
But the triple equal sign is always confusing.
So I'm going to try to pull up a very good, I believe the actual documentation does really well about, has a really good page about it. I'm trying to find it. So double equal, okay, here we go. This is the page I was talking about. So this is like a very good sort of overview of what it does and how it works. The triple equal, I believe, is I think also matches the type, there are two things here. So one is $_request. So there are two different things, right? One is sort of PHP if conditions check for both is a value and is like actually has a value. So if you have $foo, and then right next to it you have a condition that says if $foo print X or something, this fails because PHP treats if conditions as both empty and actual, like matches whatever condition you specify. So I think of it as just two sort of levels. So one is like really, really has to be just equal to this, or has to be sort of roughly equal to this. And sort of just in most cases, I believe there won't be a problem with which one you use. Just think about the triple equal as just like adding a layer of certainty to what you're looking for. And that should really be all you need. And in most cases, when you replace the triple equals with a double equals, it'll work, but I'm not sure if it works the other way around. So I think that's the difference. For instance here, like we know that MySQL connect on failure will return only false, like only like the exact output that we expect. So we just explicitly check for that and go from there. Sweet, so let's begin with index.phps. Oops, let me just copy the index.phps to a source file. Here we go. Okay, so the one config file, only one require, because config itself requires two files, so we've just required everything that we need for this file so far. First, you set up a query, and this is something we've done. So this part right here, so it says select post.star, so just posts, it's probably useful to start with the actual table. So let's take a look at posts. The structure of posts contains five fields. The fields are basically ID, title, date, content, and user ID. User ID basically maps each post to the user who created it, so a secondary key for the user who created it. The title of the post, the date of the post, the content, the date is a timestamp. So when we actually browse this, we see that like user ID 4 created this post, user ID 3 created this, 2 created this, and the actual IDs of the posts themselves. Let's just take a look at the actual blog. So the first one is this post that has the last one is a post that has this title. It's all just random text, so don't read into it. But and that is the first post that we see here. So just a post with a bunch of with no comments here. But on the next one, we see how many comments have been specified for each, and you can also leave a comment to the actual post. So this is the actual like table and sort of structure of the MySQL database. So this is a query that's going. I'm going to go through just parts of it because it's a fairly large code base, and I want to go over some other stuff specifically with respect to project 2. So here, order by post date DESC, as the name suggests, is just ordering the list of posts that you have. You're ordering it by descending order of the date field. So for each post, you have a list. So in the post table, you have a bunch of posts, and each of them has a date, and you want to get it back in terms of like whoever posted the most recent post. So you would, if you sort it in descending order, you start with the most recent and so on. So order by post, so that's your actual, that's the content that you actually want to get. Your first query, MySQL, using MySQL query, which also I'm sure you're familiar with, you check to see if it fails. Again, very good thing to do because any calls that you make to a database, for instance, is always good to just check for the output, just make sure that it actually passed and that you don't have to sort of, because here, if suppose you couldn't query the database for whatever reason, the file would just exit, and that's the ideal sort of graceful exit scenario. And then require once template slash biggin.php. So let's take a look at this. Template slash biggin.php. Biggin.php did not work because it's not an entire file, but biggin.phps is basically just the header of the file, and this is something I talked about briefly for project one. But it's a really, really good idea to factor out the header of each file into its own PHP page. So here, the code that you see in this place, so the HTML declaration, like the doc type declaration, or just like grabbing the CSS files from Yahoo APIs, et cetera, will happen only once. And every time you want to do it, you just require this page, and it will populate your HTML for you. And in the actual, there's a bunch of CSS. The page obviously is fairly pretty. And here you have blog is authenticated, which is a function that we saw in functions.php. So if this returns true, we know that the user is signed in. So if the user is signed in, we set user to session of blog user. So this should give us a sense of how the actual authentication stuff works. So we have so session of blog user, which is a constant, again, defined in config.php. This blog, this entire basically variable just stores whatever the ID of the user is. It actually stores a class of the user. So it basically stores the actual user object. So you have another class that has a bunch of user details in it. So if you take a look at this part right here, it says echo user of user. So username of user. This is again a class syntax, so just take a look at it. If you have, just go over a tutorial for classes. If you have any questions about it, and as we see in the page at the very top, there's logged in and then add post and then sign out. So in the event that the person did authenticate, So if the person did authenticate, we want to say add post, log out, and the actual username of the user. And otherwise, we just say, here's the login page for you to sign in. Sorry.
If the user hadn't authenticated, could he have actually gotten to that page?
I'm sorry?
If I'm a little confused. I understand the concept behind authentication, but it seems like if they hadn't authenticated, they probably couldn't have gotten to that page to begin with.
If they had, so it's all the same page, but it's clearly like divided by. Sorry, let me find begin.php again. So it's all on the same page, right? Like regardless of whether the user is sort of signed in or not, this is the page that you load. But within the page, you have this part which says, if blog is authenticated, if the user is signed in, do something. Otherwise, do something else.
Okay, so basically, if he didn't go through the login page, but he just tried to go right to this page,
mm-hmm.
that's why you're checking.
Exactly.
Okay.
So actually not. So keep in mind that this page gets included in every page. So the index page, for instance, includes begin.php. So when you actually go to the blog, so I'm going to sign out. So right now my authentication is not set, right? So when you look on top, it says sign in, whatever. But when I do sign in, so let me do this. It says it gives you the additional features of actually signing in. And the way that's done is just in one place, and that's just this part right here. So it says, if the blog is authenticated, display this. So display all this. Else, you just display login, sign in. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
A further question about authentication. So, you know, my understanding has been that means what you think it means.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to be really clear on this because I'm getting some interesting behavior in my project, right?
Sure.
So it essentially means in a system like this that you're connected to the database,
mm-hmm.
As a particular user.
Not connected to the database. It's connected like because connected to the database involves like actual MySQL like connecting to the database. Yeah. Here, you're still connected to the database regardless of whether the user is signed in or not. Because if you were not, you wouldn't be able to display the posts on the front page, right? So actually connecting to the database is different from actually being sort of logged in into a system. Here it's the latter, so it's just logged into a system. So if you're logged into a system, you want to let them add a post, do stuff. Otherwise, you want to like not let them do that.
Okay, so really dumb question. If you're not logged into a database, you log into the system. What is the system that you're logged into?
Oh, okay, so what is the system that you're logged into? That's just the blog framework that we've set up here.
I see.
Right, so this is very like sort of application layer authentication. So like in the application, you want certain people to be able to write posts and certain people not.
Right.
So, and we're going to differentiate this by giving them certain credentials. And when they sign in and the credentials are right, you say, oh, this person is a valid user. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to mark this flag that says this is the username. So
no worries. I think the reason I'm confused is because in the lecture examples, you know, David takes you through a bunch of examples where you make the connection to the database, you define yourself as a user,
mm-hmm.
And you become authenticated in
sure.
that process, and that carries over to the next page.
Sure. So, yes. So, in this page, sorry, I'm going to repeat the question. He was talking about how David and some of the examples had basically connection to the database, and then authentication, and et cetera. So, there are two parts here. So, one is the actual database, right? And this I'm going to just call project. So just think about it as the application layer sort of system that you've built. So authenticating to the database is based on your password, username, and password. So specifically here, so if you have includes/config.phps, so here you have these database server. Oops, this is an old version, but. Database server, database username, database password, database name. So there are three here. And you will any sort of authentication that happens on the database side is just when you call MySQL Connect. Because to MySQL Connect, you give them the username, password, et cetera. And if any of that is wrong, it won't let you connect to the database. So that's one side. The other side is the actual project. So within this project, we have users who can blog and who cannot. So it's just like two separate things, and I hope that distinction is clear. Does that make sense? Okay, we can go over it more in detail right after section if you still have any questions. Awesome. Okay, so now I guess logout makes a lot of sense. We're just including this config.php file that we've seen a couple of times now. We're setting a cookie to the current time minus 3600. That basically sets it in the past, so your cookie expires. So the way you like expire a cookie is by setting the cookie to something in the past. So therefore, it is no longer valid. Session underscore destroy, so you're just unsetting all the elements you have in the session. This is something you probably did for your cart when people hit clear cart on the in project one. And once you're done with all of that, you redirect them to index.php. And this is something that the blog redirect function is something that we saw in functions.php. And basically just points the user to a different page. So this part makes sense?
So the session destroy, that effectively takes care of all the variables you would have had, so the authentication is now officially gone.
Exactly. So the session destroy basically unsets serve everything here. So this like variable that we'd set, so blog user set to whatever, it basically says, oh, like the person logged out, so this is no longer valid, so I'm going to kill it. Make sense?
Yep.
Okay, so let's take a look at the actual code after. So you have the begin. So the begin basically takes care of everything in the file, everything inside of the page up to a certain point. And now you have the content specific to this page. So the index page, you have a content navigation. So this is, again, just how it looks. So this is not something that should matter. So here you say search for... if is set search. So what is search? Search is basically a MySQL real escape string upon calling dollar underscore get search. We'll come back to what this looks like. So let's just search for this. On the right side, there's a little search bar. So I'm going to just hit that. I'm going to hit OK. Search for this word found four results and all four pages that I had, because it's this lorem ipsum text that repeats fairly often. So it just prints out all of them. So here it says, so if you take a look at the URL here, it's a GET request. So we're very familiar with this now. GET request that passes search to passes the value TORTOR to the variable search, the GET variable search. Here you have in the actual page, you say, dollar if is set. So if this thing is actually set, then just update your search variable to just MySQL real escape it. We've seen a SQL injection via a great educational and fun comic last time, and actually update the query to sort of search for the whatever you search for. So here you're saying so let's go back here. So search for whatever you just searched for. So here I hit .TOR, and that's it. Search for TOR. Found MySQL numRows. MySQL numRows is a function that prints given a MySQL resource. It prints out how many rows are there in that result. It says result, and then echo the MySQL numRows of result. So it just prints it out. Then it actually, while post equals MySQL fetch object result, blog display post. Blog display post is a function that we saw in functions.php. So let me pull it up. That's weird. Let's pull this up in config.php. Okay. I think I copied the files wrong, but blog display post does exactly what you expect it to. It basically just prints out all the results that you get. So you basically says you take this so while post equals whatever. So while post has something, just display the actual post in the format that you expect it to.
So what's the fetch object? I haven't seen that one before.
Okay, so fetch object. So we've seen MySQL fetch array a couple of times. So MySQL fetch array fetches the actual thing as an associative array. So it just says, so if you have a row that is, if you have a row that has name and ID in a very simple database, and you have foo and 3, when you fetch it as an array, let's say you fetch it as an array into dollar row, to the variable dollar row, the way you would access these is just dollar row of name and dollar row of ID. the MySQL fetch object basically converts this into sort of a PHP object. So the only difference here for our purposes will be that you access it via the arrow. So you might have seen the arrow operator in a couple of in some code that we've seen so far, but it just says get this and just grab. So get, so if now in this case it would be dollar row of name and dollar row of ID.
So it just takes all those rows and makes a big object out of it.
Yeah.
And then you can just throw the object aside.
So yeah, exactly. So like. So an associative array is basically this, right? So it has name something, ID something. Object just is the same way, but the way you access it is using the arrow operator. The good thing about the array is that you can iterate over it. So you can say for each element in this array and look through each of them. But for this, it's more sort of limited in accessing them directly. Does that make sense? Cool. I'm gonna go through a little bit more of this code, but first I want to check in to see if you have any specific questions with respect to project 2 that you want me to go over. Any questions overall? Okay, cool.
Well, I guess, there's one question that mm-hmm. I guess you answered in email about. I wasn't quite sure what to do. You when you set up your session, you usually say session authenticated is true.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if the user puts in a proper password.
Right.
Then when you go to other files, is the code after session start, if session authenticated is false, then exit?
Yes. I mean, not necessarily that way. So in that case, we're just saying sort of blanket policy by saying if a user is not authenticated, we're just not going to display anything on this page. We're just going to exit right out of it. And that's an acceptable approach to take in certain pages. But in a blog, for instance, even if I'm not signed in, I want to be able to read the posts.
Oh, I see.
So there are two sort of separate paths that the user can take, and that's. But it's just two different ways of handling it. But the exact logic is right. So you set a flag in session, and then you check them every time you want to see if they're authenticated.
Can you just shuttle them back to the login page?
Could you? Yeah, totally. That's an acceptable. That's another great way to do it. So like, I actually wanted to. So, okay. So, I'm gonna sign out. So, for instance, in this page, the add post page, for instance, should be accessible only to a user who's authenticated, right? So when I actually hit add post, it just redirects you back to index.php. So that's exactly what we do here. Any other questions? Okay, so let's go through how much ever is we can of the rest of this code. So the next set is templates end. Let me kill this, so end.phps. And this is, again, exactly what we did in the beginning. So we have whatever div we opened in the header, we're closing it here. So we have this header called primary content, we're closing here. We're doing a bunch of secondary content, so we have the actual like static text in the page. So on every page you have this sort of about the course, the search, this categories, et cetera. So for each of these, you have a bunch of the categories here are obviously static. By if you when you look at them, you see that they're just like hard coded in, with no real links to anywhere. So it's just a secondary content is just the entire part on the right side, and the search bar again on every page that you go to. Archives again static, just doesn't check for dates, just prints these out. And then the actual footer, so Chris Power, who's the TF who wrote it, and close to the body and the HTML tags. So once again, it takes out a lot of code that you duplicate, because otherwise you would have to include, you'd sort of have a header for each HTML page at the beginning, and close all the HTML and like the body tags and the head and whatever else is left at the end. So this just takes out all the duplication from that. Does this page make sense? Great. Let's take a look at the comments. So the comments has the ID, the author, the email, date, content, and post ID. Once again, just reinforcing sort of secondary key idea. Each comment is tied to a post because that's the nature of the actual object. So, and each comment needs to know which post it's tied to. So the post ID basically references whichever post the comment was for. So when you actually browse this, you see that there are 7 comments so far, and 3 of them are for the third post. So just whichever post ID they are they sort of refer to. The actual email of the person who commented, the ID of the comment, and the date sort of formatted in the way SQL likes it too. So let's take a look at add. Oops. List files add comment.phps. Okay. So add comment.phps once again includes config.php. So it does everything that config.php does. So it connects to the blog, got blog engine, etc. And then it checks to see if ID is specified. So if ID is not specified, it just says if you're on a page where you're trying to serve add a comment without specifying the ID of the post that you're trying to submit to, which doesn't really make sense because each comment has to be tied to the post. This is exactly the approach that you brought up. We just redirect them to the index page where you're saying this is not valid. And then we get values from the actual post. So is there an email? Oops, there is an email. I'm going to take, but I'm going to try to skip over that. I'm going to probably take that code offline. But the actual code just goes through each comment for the post, like takes a look at it and updates the comment table, which is this table right here. So basically an insert query to update the table here, and it fills in with values. So when you actually display the post, all you need to do is, if you are displaying post ID 4, you just want to pull all the comments from the site, from the comments table, that has the ID number equal to 4. So once you do that, you can just display how many other posts there are. So that one did not have any posts, but here, using the secondary key once again, because 3, remember, had 4 comments, it finds that it has 4 comments, and it just displays each of them in sort of neatly formatted sort of CSS manner. Make sense?
So when you had the search bar before, was that searching all the entries to look for a specific word or phrase?
Mm-hmm. So the search bar, the question was, how does the search bar work? This is a query, in MySQL, there's the like keyword. So we've seen a lot of where. So we say, select star from table where username equals X. For instance, if you're trying to figure out if a user actually can register before when he tries to. The like keyword basically sort of compares strings. So it says if you say where some string like something, it basically checks to see if that actually contains the string. So here when I searched for this really long string, it found only one post and basically matched. It went through each of the posts in my table. For each of them, it checked to see if it was like the string that I gave it. And if it was like the string that I gave it, it sort of prints that out, goes to the next post, etc. Like keyword is really useful if you want to sort of compare just to see if a certain thing just contains a keyword, not just in terms of search, but like if you have some sort of mechanism where you're storing details about the application within some other form than just the actual string. The like keyword basically just lets you string compare at the database level.
So if you had a large database filled with all sorts of different things and you use the like, what would you expect to be returned? Just a listing of the topic IDs?
Sure.
You wouldn't expect all the entries to come back.
So the question was, what would you expect like to return? So let's actually work with this like name, sort of name and ID database that I, fictional name and ID sort of useless database that I brought up. So here, right now, if you want to select all the posts, you would just say select star from table. So I'm just going to call this table, which is obviously a terrible name, but select star from table, and this gives you a MySQL resource filled with a bunch of rows, right? And this is just how you would work with it generally. Select star from table where name like FO This is basically just like your equals sort of keyword. So equals, I guess, operation. So here it just says select all the rows from the table that have the where whose name is like foo, F-O. And this also will return just to the list of MySQL resources. We'll just return a list of MySQL resources, and you can just look through each of them, and each of the ones that you look at, you know that fit this criterion. So it's not necessarily very different from select star. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see. Okay, so another thing that I wanted to show you is the blog.sql file. So I recognize that a lot of people have been developing on your local machines before you sort of export to the cloud. And this is basically how you would go about doing it. So on phpMyAdmin, when you go on the actual database, you have this tab that says export. So if you click the tab, you can basically select a bunch of options. And once you actually hit go, you will have a file that basically is exported out sort of everything that the table database needs. And you can SCP this or SFTP this to your sort of machine on the cloud. Or just actually, you can just go to phpMyAdmin on the cloud and hit the import tab. So when you hit the import tab, you can select the file that you like loaded from there, and just import all the data from your original database.
So the only thing that needs to be set up is the database names have to match.
The only thing that needs to be set up is the database names have to match. Not maybe not even that. I don't think you even need the database names to match because if you look at the actual dump that it creates. If you look at it, it's just a bunch of queries. So it says create table categories, insert into categories, and none of these actually use the database name. So so whichever database that you import into it will just take all of these and print it out.
Nice.
So if you've been developing on your local host, don't worry, you can move sort of port all of this to the to the required directory with very little work. And if you're again, if you're working on your local host, make sure that you do this beforehand, not too close to the deadline, simply because of what errors might crop up when you actually try running it on the cloud. So definitely check that beforehand to make sure that there are no issues. That's all I have for tonight. But if you have any questions, email it at help@cs75.net. Okay, so Alex is teaching section on Monday at 8:30. But there will be no section on next Thursday because of Veterans Day.